Hello and welcome to The Lineup from the True Blue LA Podcast Network. That's the word I'm going to go with today. We're here with I'm still sad that I'm going to say this, but the first off-season episode.
We could actually, if we want to be semantic, we can postpone it and not the episode, but and say it's not technically the off-season yet.
Is it the Dodgers off season though? Kind of is, right?
Yeah, no. Well, from a logistical standpoint, like the player, nobody's a free agent until the World Series ends.
That's so fair.
As of now, the Dodgers team is still like the Dodgers, basically. So the season, as defined in the, I guess it depends how you, it's the championship season, as it were. Mm-hmm. Is still going on, so we're still going.
Okay, fine. The Dodgers ain't playing anymore. Episode, really. We're gonna talk about free agents. You have I think an easy trivia question for me, so hopefully I can nail it. I have some trivia questions for you from Craig. I don't know how hard they are, and four more questions after that. We're gonna tackle all of that after this. I didn't mention it at the top because it's happy news, and I'm in such a frumpy mood with the Dodgers not playing in the World Series. But it's also award season.
The Dodgers were represented at the World Series, and I'm not just talking about Chase Utley and Jimmy Rollins
starting out the first pitch for game four. Going to be saying.
And Cole Hamels was there. So many Dodgers.
Wow. Shane Victorino?
Wait, what?
Was Shane Victorino there?
You know what? He's probably in Hawaii. If you're in Hawaii, like, you never want to leave Hawaii. So, like, it's pretty cool. So Justin Turner won the Roberto Clemente Award, and I'll get into that in a second. But, you know, part of it is you go to the World Series, and he gets, like, presented with the trophy, like, on the field before Game 3. But the problem was, his press conference was Monday, the day of Game 3, but as the press I believe the timing of the press conference was right about when the game got called because of rain, but it's indoors, not like they're like, oh god, we got to get out of this. But so I'm fascinated by the logistics of this. I'm sure, you know, MLB or whatever, like, has just a bunch of rooms, and so it probably isn't that big of a deal. But, you know, to postpone all three games one day, obviously that's a little bit of a thing. But then you like have Justin Turner come out, right? It's him and his wife Courtney, and they're in a hotel room, I'm sure. And then they have to stay one more day because he got presented on the field on Tuesday. So, like, I'm fascinated by the logistics of all of that. But it was a nice honor for Turner, who the award is you know, named after Roberto Clemente. For service, leadership, all that stuff on and off the field, but it's essentially, and I don't want to like boil it down to one thing, but it's essentially like rewarding like players for like their philanthropic work for the most part. And he was the Dodgers nominee. Every team that gets a nominee for the award, and then a panel votes on it. There's like Roberto Clemente's family, the commissioner, some like MLB's like media rights partners. They have some reporters from them, from their like voting on it. And the fans vote on it too. I don't know what percentage of the vote that takes up. I think it's probably like one vote out of like, I don't know, 20 or something. But Turner won it this year. He's the third Dodger to win it. Steve Garvey did in 1981. Fun side note there. I don't know when it started, became like an end of season thing, but when Garvey won it, it was announced in March, like during spring training, and they're like, "Hey, you're the Roberto Clemente winner," and like, so it's just weird how sort of things evolve like that. But Clayton Kershaw, in 2012, also won, and he got the World Series treatment back then. I believe that was Tigers Giants. So I think he was in Detroit, but yeah. So in a Zoom interview for this, we were on. When Turner won, this is he said, I'm just going to read this quote from him. It was sort of a different question. I'll get into why in a second. But He said, quote, "Everything in my life feels like it has really taken off since the day I put the Dodger uniform on. Obviously, it's very special to me growing up in Southern California, getting to wear that jersey and being a part of an organization that has meant that has so much history and has so many people who have impacted the game in so many different ways. I'm just trying to do my little part." Now, so Turner's been with the Dodgers, you know, 9 years. I was looking up, so he has a 123 WRC plus this year. He had at least a 123 WRC plus in all 9 years so far. And I was shocked by this. So among the Dodgers who to play 1,000 games, there's 33 of them in total. Turner's 136 WRC plus in his time with the Dodgers is third best in team history. I was going to make that the trivia question earlier, but yeah, Pedro Guerrero, 150, and Duke Snider, 142, are the
two. I think I would have guessed Duke Snider. I don't know if I would have known Pedro Guerrero got to.
Jackie Robinson is 135, right behind him. But part of the reason for that answer that Turner gave was because it was a question about not only his Justin Turner Foundation, which he and his wife Courtney run, but also, what about you? You have a club option this year, and have you heard anything? So he has a $16 million team option. The options don't get they're not like they have to be decided by within 5 days of the World Series, but it usually doesn't happen until like after the World Series. So we don't know. The Dodgers a $2 million buyout if the Dodgers decline. Turner said he has not heard anything yet. From the team, and to be fair, I mean, I guess that's kind of normal. I don't know. Maybe there would be more communication, you would think, but maybe they're still thinking through it. I don't know. But like, so who knows what's going to happen there? It will be one of the sort of big questions of the offseason, though, for them. I mean, we're obviously going to talk about a few more when we talk about free agents. But so Turner is going to be 38 next season. He played almost as much DH this year, 61 starts, as he did at third base, where he started 66 times. So if he's back, is it going to be like in a limited role? Is that something he's going to want to do? Like what are their plans? There's a lot of like sort of things that not depends on Turner, but like could affect their availability to give Turner at bats, right? Like Max Muncy's got to play somewhere. Ideally, you would think Gavin Lux is a second baseman, and they still need a shortstop. We'll talk about at least one of those during the free agent part. that's a huge thing. But he was, you know, obviously sort of a little bit reflective in his answer there when asked about that. Who knows? But yeah, it was good honor for him. Very cool to see. And he got to two days at the World Series in Philadelphia. So good for him. He was, there was a shot of him pregame, I think game three or four. I don't remember which one, but that's when he was like shown with Cole Hamels. And I was like, oh, two former Dodgers, like just relaxing. But yeah, so he wasn't the only award. There's going to be more awards coming in the next like 2 weeks. The BBWAA awards are, going to be announced in 2 weeks. But before that, there's like Gold Glove, Silver Slugger. The Gold Gloves are already out. By the time this comes out, possibly the Players' Choice Awards will come out. But for the Gold Gloves, Mookie Betts won his sixth Gold Glove, second since joining the Dodgers. So last year, he didn't get a Gold Glove. It was the only time in the last 7 years. He was like injury plagued, limited a little bit with his hip injury and just various nagging things, but back to his sort of dynamic self, I guess, this year, unimpeded by injury outside of that like freak collision with Cody Bellinger where he broke a rib, and the numbers kind of showed it. He was really good overall, like defensively and just generally this year. And like, that was a huge reason why, is because he was healthy. So as part of the voting, it's mostly managers and coaches. Up to six coaches on each team can vote, plus the manager. And that accounts for 3/4 of the voting. And then the other 25% is from the Sabre Defensive Index. It's sort of an amalgam of, can't remember if it's 5 or 6 different defensive stats, but they sort of put it all together. And Mookie Betts did lead all National League right fielders in that. Tyler Anderson was the only other Dodger to be in like the top three at his position at pitcher. He actually led pitchers in the Sabre defensive index there. However, part of it, I think there's like a weird thing with pitchers. It's weird because they're kind of strict on the innings qualifier. There's a cutoff date like in September where it's essentially like the ERA title. You have to have an inning per game. So I think if you look at like defensive runs saved, I believe both Taijuan Walker and Ranger Suarez was the leader. Both of them were something like five innings shy or something of qualifying, but they led in defensive runs saved more than Anderson was third. But like they don't show up on that because they didn't qualify with enough innings. So it's a little weird, but like that's where we're at in the awards. But I think the next big thing, as we're recording now, game four of the World Series is going on. So it's probably going to extend at least to the weekend in Houston. So the offseason doesn't start until the World Series ends. And like the first sort of part of the offseason is free agency. And we have a lot of Dodgers free agents to talk about. So I thought we would sort of pick homes for them. Are you ready? Are you ready to do this?
Yeah, we're bad at this every single year, and I'm ready to put another one in.
So just as a point of clarification, we're not counting all the players who the Dodgers hold options on for next year, like Justin Turner we mentioned, Hanser Alberto, Danny Duffy, and Jimmy Nelson. If you might be thinking, Danny Duffy and Jimmy Nelson, but they didn't pitch for the Dodgers. Yeah, but they were on the injured list all year. And Nelson was coming off the dual, the Walker Buehler, if you will, Tommy John and flexor tendon repair all in one. But that was in late 2021. But yeah, so Danny Duffy, I think his deal was like $3 million this year and like a $7 million option. I would bet about $7 million. They're not going to exercise that option. So that's an easy one. Jimmy Nelson, I don't know what his option – I don't remember what his option price is, but I think it's relatively cheap, so you never know. But, yeah, those will be decisions. We're not counting them here. We can talk about them at a later date once the decisions have been made, not that we're going to necessarily pick where they're going to go, but more like here's what we have. But so after that, there are 10 free agents. 6 a.m. the day after the World Series, they become officially free agents and no longer Dodgers. So just – last year was the first time it became weird because there was a time, and especially during the lockout, where technically Clayton Kershaw was not a Dodger, which was the first time ever since he was drafted. So this year it could happen again. I guess technically they could re-sign him before it gets to that point, but you never know. But I think I put them in alphabetical order. You can go first if you want. Tyler Anderson's up first. Where do you think he's going to go?
Starting pitching, I think, is definitely the most interesting aspect of what and shortstop, I think, are the two really interesting things to look at. As you can kind of count on Dustin May and Tony Gonsolin being there, and Urias, and then what do you fill it up with after that? I think. Until told otherwise, I will believe that Clayton Kershaw is a Dodger, no matter what his contract status is. But I don't think you're not going to like get to five and then stop. Certainly when you're counting on Dustin May and Tony Gonsolin, and they have yet to be fully productive for a year and then into the offseason. Excuse me, into the see, that's where I'm at already. So down looking the playoffs. So
wait, yeah. But before you guess where Anderson's gonna go, let's just lay it out. So Urias is clearly number one. Let's put Gonsolin number two, Dustin May number three. Then it's like right now, is it Ryan Pepiot, Michael Grove? Like is that where we're at?
You know, are they ready to actually try out Bobby Miller? Like there's a lot of right. Like what do they do?
But like you're saying, the point is
assuming they're trying to get you have to think they're trying to get like three starting pitchers, right?
Yeah,
like including, so it's Clayton and two others, and then if Clayton does choose to either officially retire or basically retire by playing for the Rangers.
I believe the official True Blue LA podcast response to that is la 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 la. Yeah. La, la, yeah. No, I know.
But still, even if Clayton comes back, I think they have to be looking for at least two.
Right. He's like a 22 to 25 start guy, right?
Yeah.
Like basically.
So you're looking at probably two starters, and then, you know, cast your luck at like last year, the Tyler Anderson signings, the Andrew Heaney signings, the guys that don't need to pan out, but if they do, can be home runs. So all that just to say,
just think that, and it's not just free agency too. Like they could, like, imagine if they traded like Freddie Freeman. What kind? No, I'm just kidding. When they could definitely trade for.
That's fair. That's fair.
Yeah.
But not so if Tyler Anderson, I feel like after his just stellar season, this is really his best shot in his career to make a nice payday for himself. I don't know if that's something the Dodgers would be interested in, depending on what the competition is. But I'll say no, and he is going to go. You know, they're in my head, so I will say the Phillies on
I would say you don't have to go.
Oh, I don't. Year, oh, thank goodness.
Yeah. No, what I want is exact dollar amount, years, options. No. So I would say I don't know how much I buy this. Here's what I think. I do wonder. So this is just a good time to mention. Well, we'll talk about it with Kershaw too. But the qualifying offer is 1 year, $19.65 million. So Tyler Anderson made $8.5 million this year. Not in a million years heading into the season would you think he's a guy that you would make a qualifying offer for heading into free agency, because that could like crater his market, right? Like, because he'd be out there like, oh, cool, Tyler Anderson would be a nice signing by giving up a draft pick for him, like, you know, that kind of a thing. So that said, I'm going to say he returns to the Dodgers by accepting the qualifying offer.
Okay. I can see that.
So I actually don't know if they're going to, I'm not that sold that he's going to accept. I mean, that they're going to offer him the qualifying offer, but like, it could be like a neat little gambit.
We're going to talk about this in the next player. It also seems something the Dodgers are frequently excited to do, these short-term high AAV plays,
right? It limits their risk in that sense, right? Like, so when you said we're gonna talk about this, I thought you're like, I'm like, Joey Gallo's not getting a qualifying offer.
No,
but yeah, he's also not eligible. But yeah.
Well, yeah, and I also would have meant. I meant they might bring him back on a higher than you would expect, maybe AAV 1 year, prove that, you know, an off season of working with the Dodger coaches, maybe you can kind of return to your former glory of when he was with the Rangers. So I think he's back as a Dodger.
This is Gallo.
Yep.
Okay. So I don't know what to think here. I didn't put it in the notes, but I was on, we were both on vacation at the same time and, or roughly the same time. And, there was the rumor that the Dodgers are not only interested in Aaron Judge, but to play right field and move Mookie Betts to second base. And I just like, I gave that 3 seconds of like consideration, and like, absolutely the hell not. Like, for one, one of Mookie Betts' greatest strengths is his defense in the outfield. And I don't think you take that away for, like, I know he was drafted as an infielder, but that's a long, long time ago. And I know he gets to play there as a lark occasionally. they couch it as, oh, well, we just want to get him off his feet or whatever. I don't buy that for a second. But then also looking at the Dodgers roster, they have, I'm assuming Cody Bellinger's getting non-tendered. Let's just say for the moment, Their outfielder that I'm counting on right now is Mookie Betts.
Yeah.
There are two other outfield spots that they could, play Aaron Judge. Like, whether that's putting Aaron Judge in left field, great. Or, hell, Mookie Betts can play center field and Aaron Judge can still play right. I'm not trying to discount, like, they obviously still have Trace Thompson, who was a great story, but you know, you're not going to like, he's not like a pillar of the lineup now. Like all of a sudden, Chris Taylor obviously has a history, had a terrible end to 2022. But yeah, so like there is absolutely nothing in the outfield set except Mookie Betts in my mind at the moment. So that said, which means like they could bring back Joey Gallo, right? Like as a lefty guy, like sort of the jock, as it were, to sort of platoon with the AJ Pollockness of Chris Taylor, but all like in a separate way. So it's possible. That said, I think since both of us would. Just to say that I did predict a Dodger will sign with the Rangers, I'm going to say Gallo goes back home.
And, okay, and, I can see that.
Goes to Texas, yeah. So up next, another pitcher who was on an $8.5 million deal this year. Tyler Anderson, just for clarification, was on an $8 million deal, earned an extra $500,000 for pitching 100 innings. Andrew Heaney was $8.5 million deal. And, you know, he pitched very well when he pitched. It's just he had the home run barrage late, but still overall numbers was very good and had a similar sort of uptick in terms of like highest, you know, very high strikeout rate, did really well. And I can't say he's like poised to cash in. But where do you think he resigns?
I wouldn't be shocked considering, you know, if they give another go and see if they can get the home run total down. I like, not literally, but it just like was playing the Wheel of Fortune in my head on like just picking a random team. And the Rockies were the first one I came up with, which would be hilarious. I'm not going to do that. I don't know. How about Miami?
Miami. All right. There was an old, I don't remember if it was Sega. I think it was Sega. It was a football game, and I forgot who the announcer was, but anytime he played the Dolphins, one of Miami, it was just the way he said it always cracked me up.
NFL Blitz, maybe.
I don't remember playing that, but it could. I'm not ruling it out, because it might have been in college where it was like maybe someone else's game. Yeah. So
it sounds like more like see. NBA Jam, that I think about it. Obviously, wrong sport, but
oh man, that
Indiana.
So this is me stalling. But Andrew Heaney. So just at the risk of I'm like sort of lowering my ceiling, but also raising my floor. I will also say he returns to the Dodgers. Mm-hmm. So I think one of the lefties that's not Kershaw will return to the Dodgers. We'll see.
Next up, Tommy Canley.
So coming off of Tommy John surgery, then he also missed another four months with another elbow injury this year, but was very, very good when he did pitch. They sort of did put the work in, right? Like they did him on a 2-year deal coming off Tommy John with the idea he'd pitch. I guess it depends on the relationships, right? Like if he feels comfortable, like, or maybe it's like an unfinished business thing, or like, what do they think about that? Like, what does he think about that? So I'll say Dodgers.
I hereby declare Tommy Canley to be Jacob Burch's lock of the week to return to the Dodgers.
Wow. I almost went Giants here. Lock of the week. All right. I love it. All right. So up next, Clayton Kershaw.
Let's move on. He's a Dodger.
The qualifying offer. Last year, they didn't make it. They said they didn't want to rush his decision. He was obvious. It was a different situation. He had elbow injury. There was a lot of uncertainty about what was going to happen. So if I had to guess this year, based on what Andrew Friedman said at the season ending presser, I don't think they will offer him the qualifying offer this year for the same reasons. I'm going to give you a quote from a couple weeks back, October 18th, Andrew Friedman, the end of season presser. Quote, from our standpoint, nothing has changed. My strong hope is that Clayton Kershaw is pitching here next year. But like I said last year, for him to take the time and put his head together with Ellen, figure out what makes the most sense for their family is what we're going to afford them the time to do. Whether it's a decision they make quickly or it takes some time, I'm not sure of that right now. So he didn't outright say they aren't going to give him the qualifying offer, but I would be shocked if they gave him the qualifying offer. So that said, he's going to clearly return to the Dodgers. Yeah. No question. That's my lock of the week.
Fair enough. I mean, so, this just goes beyond. You don't need to ask. So
exactly. Yeah, it's understood. Speaking of lock of the week, Craig Kimbrel. I don't know. Like he wasn't on the Dodgers playoff roster. Have we seen the last of Craig Kimbrel as a Dodger? I guess, but
I think it's more like I'm trying to think of like what team, because his reputation is so damaged at this point.
Yeah,
what team is gonna gamble on that and is in a position to do so? And I have been struggling to come up with a team. Is it your turn to go first? It is your turn to go first. Ha!
Wait, didn't I do
you did Kainley? No, I did Kershaw.
Okay. All right.
You might have stolen my thunder, but.
Sorry. That's true. I did.
I get a stall. So I will excellent.
Say, I'm just, it's not his original team, but it was one of his former teams. I'll just say Cubs for Kimbrel.
How about the Royals? I don't know.
Under new leadership. Yeah. What do we got? Okay, so up next now is Chris Martin. A note with Chris Martin. So he doesn't have the 6 years required for a free agency like that's usually the case here. But he's 36. He had it written into his contract with the Cubs at last offseason that he'd be a free agent at the end of the deal. He pitched in Japan for 2 years in 2016 and 17. And I was looking up, I couldn't quite confirm on the Braves deal, but I'm pretty sure that was the case. In each of his next three contracts, in the majors, he has it written in that he's a free agent after the end of the deal. You know, it's one of those things, comes with the leverage of doing that. Unlike, you know, players who are like, just going through the ARB system and they didn't have like a free market. So, his 2 year deal with the Rangers first, then 2 year deal with the Braves and a 1 year deal with the Cubs, all of them, he was a free agent at the end of the deal. So without the 6 years of service time, but he is a free agent. That is my way of throwing to you. Where do you think he goes?
The Mets.
Okay. So for Chris Martin, I will say, let's go Giants.
Okay.
Now we have a hometown man, Kevin Pillar, who was on a minor league deal, got to the majors, suffered a shoulder injury, sort of made his way back, played in a few AAA games in rehab down the stretch, was in the sort of get-ready camp for the Dodgers as they prepared for the playoffs, but didn't get back yet. Okay, so this is me. So I actually think it would not surprise me if I don't know if it's going to be a major league deal, but it wouldn't surprise me if Pillar is back with the Dodgers. So I'm going to say Dodgers.
The Hokkaido Nippon Ham Fighters.
Wow. All right. That's awesome. If you get that, we don't do a point system for this.
I just win the contest for the
year. Yeah, it's at least like a triple point value if we did have a point. So this one, I won't say what I'm going to say, but David Price, another lefty, left-handed pitcher.
A well-earned, comfortable recliner at David Price's house.
Yeah.
I think
it's pretty clear he's going to try. I think at various points during the season, he said he's going to retire, but then also like couched it in a, well, I haven't made my decision yet, but like at least like four national reporters or four like reporters, national and local, at some point had an interview with him where he's like, yeah, I'm going to retire. But then it comes out like, well, I haven't made my decision yet. Like, you know, like it was in Bob Nightingale's column in like late August or maybe it was early September. And then like the day, later that day, he's like, well, you know, it's nothing is official, but I think it's pretty clear he's going to retire. He just hasn't announced it yet. So we're both in agreement there. The last one, certainly not the least, who almost who definitely will get a qualifying offer, Trey Turner, shortstop.
Mm-hmm.
This is me?
Yes.
Okay, I have...
No, it's me. It's me, right? All yeah. Right, sure. Yeah. I think the Dodgers and the Atlanta Braves will trade shortstops.
Whoa. All right. Just to note, Jacob doesn't mean technically. Both Denzel Johnson
and Trey Turner. No, it's going to be a really complicated sign and trade with
it's going to be like
the Utah Jazz.
Gavin Lux, technically a shortstop as a prospect for like, I don't know who their next in line is, but okay. So yeah, I have no real read on this. So, and he, both Turners are like sort of fulcrum, I guess, points in the offseason where what the decision on those two are like affects so many things. Like if they don't bring back Trey, they obviously need a shortstop. And I am not sure if just moving Gavin Lux there is the answer, but it also, I think they're very clearly going to do something in the rather large in that department, like in terms of like spending that, maybe not like $35 million a year or something, but like a good chunk on like a good offensive player. And we've talked about their versatility. Maybe they need a little bit more of that, but it still allows them to like last year, they had a first baseman. They signed Freddie Freeman because he was available. Like, so I don't know if they re-sign Turner. And I do think Dansby Swanson would make a lot of sense, especially if it's like a shorter deal where, let's say,
this was my original thought, and I can't think of anything better, but I also think Xander Bogaerts makes a lot of sense for the Dodgers. Mm. But.
And then, so this is a long-winded way of me saying Trey Turner's going to go to the Yankees.
Okay.
So I know there's always sort of a back burner rumor that like Carlos Correa Dodgers would be interested in him. I mean, because they're interested in a lot of players, I know there'd be a backlash in a way. I don't know how big that would be. I don't know how large this segment is. I think it's one of those things where obviously he gets booed every single time at Dodger Stadium, but I also think if he's a Dodger, people probably get over it pretty quick. You know, like, not that it would be uncomfortable. It wouldn't be uncomfortable, but it'd just be weird. But yeah, that's kind of it. So obviously I'm going to just go ahead and say it. One of us, at least one of us, is right on every single one of these. I think it's pretty clear.
Wow.
Yeah. No question. I think you nailed the Ham Fighters. So yeah, I think that again, triple points for you. You did that. Just like David Price, if he doesn't retire, that's negative triple points for both of us. So Justin Brule is not a free agent.
Uh-oh.
However, he did pitch in 24 games this year. I bring this up because by the time you will have listened to this, his season in review will be up on the site. That's why he was fresh in my head. And he was one of five Dodgers relievers to pitch in 20 games in each of the past two seasons. Jacob, can you name the other four?
I can. I'm confident we're going to do it this time, and we'll see how I do after this. Who are the four non-Brulian Dodger relievers to make 20 or more appearances the previous two seasons? We keep going back and forth on whether 2022 is this season or previous season, but
yeah,
you know, it's happening before our eyes. Okay, Alex Vesia.
He is one.
Phil Bickford.
He is also one.
Brusdar Graterol.
He is one.
Evan Phillips.
He's not one. They got him too late in
yeah, I knew it would be close. With how many did he have?
Seven games last
year. Oh, wow. I definitely had it more in my head.
I was actually a little surprised that it was that low.
I thought it would be close to 20. I didn't, but mostly because I figured there was someone else that I'm drawing a blank spot on, I'm not going to play the game of trying to remove the blind spot. Go ahead and tell me.
It's someone who,
if
we're right, will have been his last two major league seasons, David Price.
Oh, okay. That makes total sense. Total sense.
He pitched, I went only by relief because Clayton Kershaw also qualifies because he did 22 starts each year. But no, David Price, 39 games in 2021, but 28 relief appearances. And then this year, 40 games all in relief. So potentially riding into the sunset. You did good. That was good. That was really good.
Yeah, no, I'm okay with that.
I'm going to do not so good.
All right, it's time for me and our friend Craig Manami to turn the tables because it's time for
Questions from Craig. We love them.
I love LA. Only played once during the playoffs, and I got to hear it. So,
So you heard 100%. And again, I just want to point out, Jacob, in the same city as the Dodgers for all four games of the NLDS, only went to one game selfishly.
Yeah, my wallet.
People want to fire the manager. They want to run people out of town. I think there's one clear scapegoat in all of this, and I'm not going to say who it is. I'm just going to.
Dodgers Hall of Famer Roy Campanella leads all Dodgers born in November with 35.6 BWAR. This week's trivia is about our Los Angeles Dodgers born in the 11th month of the year. Huh. Name the birthdays of... No. four Los Angeles Dodgers born in November recorded 21 or higher BWAR in their LA Dodger career. Can Eric name these position players?
No.
Hint, three of the four collected World Series rings in their Dodgers career.
Okay, so... the only one I'm certain was born in November is Justin Turner. I want to say he was born on November 23rd. Don't quote me on that though.
Okay.
And after that,
you were correct, by the way.
Okay. So November 21 WAR. Okay. So I'm pretty sure Corey Seager was an April baby. What about, no, was it, did he play that enough? Let's go Jock.
No.
All right. Yeah, I think just the point is, I don't know a lot of November.
Writing everyone a card? Jock born in April, by the way.
Yeah, see. I'm trying to think of like, so another one that came to mind was Matt Kemp, but I'm fairly certain he's a September baby.
He's not a November baby. I can tell you that much.
Yeah.
I'll tell you about real quick, Matt Kemp. He's a September baby. See, you know all the birthdays except for
the point is like other players. In season for some reason. Maybe it's because like
stuff would
happen on their birthday. So 21 WAR.
Hey, if the Dodgers were in the World Series, some of these would have moments in the.
Okay.
I'm going to give you years.
Hold on. This is position players. Never mind. Go ahead.
1980 to 1992.
Mike Socha.
Correct. 1964 to 1972.
Wes Parker.
Correct. 2000 to 2004.
Oh boy. That's Sean Green.
Correct. See, I just need to give you the years and you're good to go.
That's sort of cheating, but yeah.
Yeah, you got to get you something. 5 November birthday, LA Dodgers had over 500 singles in their Dodgers career. I love single records for some reason. Who were these players who got to first base safely, but not via the walk? Hint, one of the two players that was not already an answer to question one will always be remembered when the World Series is played.
What?
I don't know. Tell me.
Yeah. Okay. So just going on the previous list, gotta be. So Wes Parker, Justin Turner.
Correct.
And then it has to be Mike Socha, too.
Correct.
And then so okay, so the,
by one thing.
So there's one of will always be remembered when the okay. So he didn't play a lot. He didn't play enough for the Dodgers. Okay, this is weird. Always be remembered when the World Series is played.
Yeah, I think just generally good in the playoffs.
Sure.
Many.
But 500 singles and not people that were mentioned in the previous one, because there's right.
Like, yes, I will let you know that this player has a 17.9 BWAR, so just missed the cut, or the playoff one.
Yeah,
I'll give you another hint. The other player, not known for anything in the playoffs, given the era he played in.
I don't remember when certain. Oh, you know what? Mike Piazza.
No,
he would have been. He would have been WAR. Also, I don't know if he played enough to do 500 singles. I don't know.
Steve Yeager.
Okay.
And then Eric Karros.
I almost guessed Eric Karros.
How much WAR do you think Eric Karros had as a Dodger? That was the thing I was surprised by.
Yeah, so he was, 92... to like 2000,
91 to 2002, but yeah,
the core two. So he had, I would say five. Well, he had he's famously like 5 30-hundred years, right? That, but obviously that's not WAR,
right?
Two of those were like excellent years, but yeah, I'm surprised it's not 21 with the Dodgers. So I guess wait, is he the 17.9?
No, that was Steve Yeager.
Okay, so is he, what is he, like 19 or something?
11.9.
That's kind
of just low. Gets demolished by being a first baseman and not being
good. In the era, like, yeah. I sort of get it, but man,
I was like, low. Really?
Yeah.
Did not think it would be that low, because I was baffled because he was, oh, I guess he is on my short list for the first question, but very, very much at the bottom.
Yeah.
All right. Two LA Dodger pitchers born in November had over 1,000 strikeouts in their LA Dodger career. Who were these whiffers?
Okay, so I think only because I believe Sabre tweeted this out. We're recording this on the 2nd, and they tweeted it out yesterday, I believe. Fernando Valenzuela, a November 1st baby.
Correct.
So if we're going, so all right. Oral Hershiser was September 16th. Clayton Kershaw's March 19th. I do not know when Don Sutton was born. I do not know when Don Drysdale was born.
I'm going to let you know that Fernando is the leader of November.
Okay.
Birthdays.
Okay. Let's go with Bob Welch.
That's one of them. 1292.
Holy crap. Nice.
You have, that's it. Those are the two. Sorry. Oh, I thought he was asking for 500, just 1,000. You got both. Wow. Well done.
Nice.
Jim Brewer and Pedro Estacio are next on the list for what it's worth. And then after that, Ross Stripling.
Oh, wow. Oh, he had a funny tweet. Speaking of gold gloves, Ross Stripling did. He was, I don't want to misquote him. I'm going to pull it up while live here on the, because I said
it is the Air Greens Twitter podcast presented by the True Blue LA Network.
That's right. Ross Stripling, quote, I'm open to all analytics and metrics in our game. Just fact check. That's true. Having talked to him a lot. Back to Stripling Street. Besides the ones that say Matt Chapman isn't the best third baseman in the American League. Those metrics can eat my shorts. fun stuff.
Three November, birthday, LA, Dodger, pitchers. Do you want more adjectives? Have recorded more than 30 saves in their LA Dodger careers. Who were these firemen?
Okay, only, wait. Was Jim Brewer one?
Jim Brewer leads the pack with 126.
Okay, 30 saves.
I have a very good hint if you need for the next two.
Only because I don't remember when his birthday was, but I'm just going to say Eric Gagne.
No.
Okay. More than 30 saves. He was only a couple years. Let's go off book here and go Jay Howell.
Jay Howell with 85.
Oh, man. Okay. Wait, and you said Brewer led?
Yep, 126. And then it's Jay Howell with 85. You're missing one player with 31.
31. Antonio Osuna.
I don't think
he got 31.
My hint to you was going to be the second and third place have the same last name.
I don't know why that's bugging me. So if I just say the last name, I get it. Jeopardy rules. The same last name. hold on. Why is this tripping me up? Hold on. Nope, not that. Oh, this is stupid. So mad. Okay. Nope. I need a hint if you have it. Or you, that's your hint.
His last name is Howell.
Oh, second and third. Okay. Sorry. Yeah. For some reason, I was thinking like third and fourth in my head. So, okay. Ken Howell, obviously.
There you go.
Stupid. Man, I look like the fool now after all that. all right. That's good. Pretty good.
Good. All right. Oh, those you did. Considering, you know, yeah. I don't think player birthdays.
You
read a lot of baseball cards, so you know.
Yeah.
You certainly more equipped than me to handle that.
Yeah, I'm pleased with how I did. Howl aside.
All right. The default setting for the Baseball Reference position player comparisons is between Mike Trout and Bryce Harper. Trout has nearly twice as many BWAR, 82 versus 42, 80.4 versus 42.5 to be specific, despite only playing 25 more games and having 250 more plate appearances. But if Phillies go on to win the World Series and Harper remains a big part of that, how much will that even him up with Trout, if at all?
I mean,
it's just different things.
You're right, yeah. I mean, I think it's pretty clear that like Harper is like very clearly great, like in his own right. Like I don't know if it helps either guy or like it's fair to either guy to compare them. I think Trout's been clearly better, like just for longer now. Obviously, you know, Harper has played on better teams, both with the Nationals, and I know it took him a little bit with the Phillies, but like Angels have played in the playoffs once for Trout. So I don't know. I don't think they're going to be even up if the Phillies win the World Series. I just want to say back to the previous question that I guess I was really Thurston Howell there. That's why I was stranded. But anyway, that's enough. I'm stupid.
For the contest, name the player who will hit the last home run in the 2022 World Series. Eric, you can go first.
Just for the listener, Craig in his question put a question mark with that, which is like, can I go first? Okay, so I will, the last world home run in the World Series. So I'm going to, let's just keep it on brand, and I'm just going to say Bryce Harper.
Okay, I will say Schwarber. Either one of them should probably get a hit if they want to win this game. So we don't have to do the tiebreaker. So different players. Very good.
Nice.
Assuming there are no changes in the Dodger front office and coaching staff, do you think that this team needs a shakeup in the Dodger clubhouse?
Before the last part, I just want to note Clayton McCullough interviewed for the Royals manager job, and I think that went to I don't remember his first name, but Quatraro, who was with the Rays. He's the new Royals manager. McCullough also interviewed with the Mets last year. So in terms of like coaching staff there, but shakeup, I mean, I think there's almost bound to be one either way, just given the high stakesness of both Turner decisions, really. Like Justin Turner, now he's going to be 38, but he still commands like a lot in the clubhouse and in terms of like leadership and all that. But at a certain, I mean, it's also like pretty clearly like Mookie and Freddie Freeman, like sort of running things generally, like not that it's that cut and dry, but like, I just think there's going to be enough just regular movement or like, so they're probably going to bring in someone big, even if it's re-signing Trey Turner, right? Like, so I don't know if it needs a shakeup, but I just think maybe the roster might, just given where it's at. Like you like, especially like they're going to probably non-tender Cody Bellinger, right? Just from a standpoint, like he's been there since 2017. So like, you know, you're losing a guy. I mean, he won an MVP, right? like, and who's been there for a while. I just think it's not that they need a shakeup. I think, but a shakeup is probably inevitable. Just given like, just probably just the volume of certain moves they have to make. Not that they need like an overhaul or anything, but I think there's going to be a handful of like relatively important like moves that sort of shift things a little bit. And yeah. I think that's bound to change things generally.
I agree. I think if they have another sort of, for lack of a better term, inexplicable early exit, like not really anything you can like point to other than the fact that they did not play as well as the Padres, just point blank.
Right.
I think at that point there might be, from a pure optic standpoint, a need to do something. What that is, who knows? It doesn't need to be anything major, I think. But after just this one season, because I think you and I are on the same page that like last year kind of went like, that's probably as good as that team was. They were just completely gassed, not really, what didn't feel unexplainable at all. So this is the first time really where it's like, you know, you got to point at something, even if it's a little irrational. But just one season of that, I think, doesn't warrant anything.
Yeah, I think that's right.
All right, it's time for the delicious, wonderful food question. Halloween was on Monday, true. So I wanted to know, did you grow up in a neighborhood where kids were able to trick or treat? If so, what was the best candy you got? Second for Jacob, that's me. Is your current neighborhood a place where kids come around? And if so, what candy do you hang out? So I will go first because the answer to both are related. I grew up in two main neighborhoods, both in Santa Clarita. The first one, extremely friendly for trick-or-treating. The Santa Clarita, being a planned community, has most streets are cul-de-sacs, and there is paseos that run along the sort of meeting points of two cul-de-sacs that go for 4 or 5 miles, maybe even longer, that just connects a bunch of houses and a bunch of parks. So it was a very good
zone. That's cool. Yeah.
Trick-or-treating. Second neighborhood I grew up in, less conducive to that, but still just had a lot of younger families, so a good amount of trick-or-treating. In that neighborhood, on the other side of the longer sort of two-street combo that I was on, was one house that you knew if you got there early enough, they had king-size candy bars for the first however many kids that showed up. So that was always just like this, you know, and growing up, I remember thinking like, geez, that is not like, again, if you limit yourself to like the first however many kids, 24 or whatever kids, that's not that expensive to like dramatically change the mood of a child that they receive that. So I vowed that I would be that person. We buy about 24 king size bars, and we do not live in it. We're right against not a major inner street, but it's major enough that it's not the number one street for walking kids down. They're usually on some of the more so smaller streets. But those who venture forth, if they know, they get the. It was we did Full size Haribo gummy bears, king size Kit Kat, and king size Reese's.
Oh man, that's the gold standard.
You just gotta play with the classics. There's no don't mess around with anything but the big hits.
So I don't have strong memories of like going or like there wasn't a lot of trick or treating stuff. So where we lived, at least there, what I used to do, I guess I remember going out. I would go like with like a few friends, like in their neighborhood or something. And then my mom would pick me up later or something. It was single parent at home. So, and a lot of times my mom might be working or something. I guess by the time I was old enough or whatever, but to where like it was hard. There were a couple times she was a hairstylist and the place she worked at was in the mall, Palm Springs Mall. And so there were a few years where businesses in the mall would hand out candy to kids and we would just walk the mall. This was probably when I was really little, but that was a nice little haul because there's just a lot of stores, or it seems bigger as a kid. Like, it's not that big, yeah. Really. So I think I just went out with friends. I'm trying to think, like, Butterfinger used to be my favorite candy bar growing up. That's a good fun size bar. I've grown into more Snickers, I think, probably now, if I just had to choose like one like candy bar. Mm-hmm. Crackle is great, but like you can get that with like a Nestle Crunch because no one ever has Crackle anymore unless it's in one of those like
the big Hershey bag, and then you have to deal with Mr. Goodbar and plain Hershey.
I didn't like Mr. Goodbar growing up. I love Mr. Goodbar now. I didn't like those bags because I hated the, what do you call it? The dark, I don't like dark chocolate. And that was always like a quarter of the candy bars in there. So that was always a no go. But the underrated one was, and it's the simplest one, it's the dumbest one, Smarties. It's just a pure sugar hit. Just load all those in. Yeah. I love them.
They're controversial. I'm a big, big fan. Melissa is not. So I get all the smart. Well, now that we have Eleanor, we'll see how that goes. I think... Well, I'm trying to think what my real favorite... I love Haribo gummy bears, but they're not super traditional Halloween candy. I, like you, like Crackle and Crunch. And fun size, Crackle are better.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. I will say this. One thing I have done as an adult, and it was probably like 8 years ago or something, but I did once, and I guess I could have done this at like Smart and Final or something, but I bought a box of full-size Crackle candy bars off Amazon and got it delivered. So I was basically like big Crackle for a while, and that was it. I'm probably embarrassed to say that did not last as long as it should have in my pantry because I probably went through them too quick, but I felt like a king. That was like one of my most Josh Baskin and big moments, like, hey, I'm an adult, I get Crackle.
Kit Kat. I think Kit Kat is my
Kit Kat's wonderful. Yeah.
Yeah.
I know everyone likes, there's the, oh, it's white chocolate. It's not really white chocolate, but I actually like white chocolate Kit Kats. I know there's a lot of offshoots, especially like foreign brand mm-hmm. Kit Kats mm-hmm. that have like really cool flavors.
Green tea is delicious.
Yeah, and I haven't had a ton of those, but yeah, those are hard to find here, at least.
Well, if you go see Kevin Pillar hit next year, you can pick some up at Japanese 7-Eleven.
What a perfect coda to end on. So we've obviously, when we look back at the offseason and go, wow, we just nailed all these free agents, I think we should celebrate with Crackles. I think that's gonna be how we do it. But yeah, we did good. I'm proud. Our first podcast of the almost offseason. We're still holding out because the season's still going on. So that's it for us. We will talk to you in a couple weeks, I think, probably.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Yeah, we'll figure out a reasonable schedule for the off season. But 2 weeks, we'll see you. Thanks for listening.
See you then.